Hey, everybody. Welcome to Locked On Lakers for Wednesday. Brian Kamenetsky and Andy Kamenetsky. A lot of good stuff to talk about today, including, Andy, the potential return for LeBron James. Woj dropping on his Twitter handle that he might be back as early as this week.
That's crazy.
Presumably Friday or Sunday, or I guess that'll be, if nothing else, next week. That's a little quicker than I would have thought.
Well, I mean, we've had no idea about LeBron's return, period. All we've ever heard this entire time since he's been out with that high ankle sprain is just indefinitely. And yep. And they have gone out of their way to offer as few clues as possible. So this notion that he could be back, I think, quicker than anybody expected. I mean, there's a lot to unpack with that.
So we'll do that, including about how it impacts guys like Dennis Schroeder and THT, who have really played outsized roles in his absence. We'll talk about that. In our second segment, we'll get into some of the offseason business the Lakers have, and it's not just Dennis Schroeder or Caruso or THT. It's also Frank Vogel, who has gone on, I think it's fair to say, a crazy journey in his first couple of years as Lakers head coach. And finally, Andy, in our last segment, we'll look at $5.2 million. That is what LeBron James's rookie card went for. $5.2 million. That is a huge chunk of disposable income. So we'll talk about that. Today's episode brought to you by Michelob Ultra at only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. Stay tuned for the Ultra Player of the Week coming up later in the episode. Spoiler alert.
It's dude that bought the card.
Yeah,
that's the Ultra Player of the Week.
Yeah, he could. I mean, he has the money to buy that award if he wants to. I don't. You know, we haven't been here that long, but I'm sure that's for sale.
I'll tell you right now, really, if he offers us $5.2 million, it's his. I don't care what happens to us with our employment.
That's right. So that's not a bad way of looking at it. All right. So we mentioned it. LeBron James, according to Woj, could be back as early as this week. That would presumably not be Wednesday night in Washington, but against the Kings on Friday, maybe the Raptors on Sunday. They play again on Monday against the Nuggets. The point being, LeBron James is coming back and it's going to be soon. It seems, when you kind of read both about how they brought Davis back from his injury and then the type of injury that LeBron had, where it's not the kind of thing where, like with Davis, they were worried about, like, you bring him back too soon, he could rupture his Achilles. There's no real threat with that with LeBron. He just twisted again. It seems like they're trying to do it in a way that, as when LeBron is back, they can play him like LeBron James for 6 games, 7 games, 8 games, whatever it is, rather than having to carefully ease him back into the lineup. I like that approach better. I'd rather have a fully functional LeBron for less time than something you have to dance around for more time.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a really good thread from a guy, Dr. Evan Jeffries. He's a doctor of physical therapy. You can find him on Twitter @GameInjuryDoc. And he's talking about the differences between LeBron's return versus Anthony Davis, some of the things you got into, Brian. But I'm going to read part of it right now. Long-term outlook, AD was at risk of tearing his Achilles, which would put him out for 9 to 12 months versus LeBron returning too soon, which wouldn't have had major long-term injury implications besides pain and risk of spraining his ankle again. However, LeBron will be taking a full 6 weeks, which should indicate a return to normal superstar form. And I've always felt, Brian, that the Lakers were trying to do their best to get either one of them back on the floor as much time as they can, as quickly as possible, while giving them enough time not to have to worry about a ramp up. Like, AD has gone up to what would be his normal minutes relatively quickly.
Yeah, 3 games. Like, he played 31 or 32 minutes against the Magic on Monday. Like, that's relatively close to what he would do in a normal
game. And even the second game, you know, there have been talk in the beginning about him having to play like 15 minutes a night for a few games. And by game two, he was closing in on 30 minutes. So it just gives you the idea that in both cases, they have really been exercising caution and really just not wanting to screw around with the possibility of re-aggravating the injury in LeBron's case, or, like we talked about with AD, something actually really catastrophic.
Right. And so, obviously, we all understand what it means to get LeBron James back. Like, as much as as Anthony Davis is a transformational player, the Lakers do not win a title last year. They will not win one this year unless he is elite, elite in the playoffs. Like that, these are all things that are true. LeBron is the engine of this team and the thing that makes it function at the level that it needs to win a title. But what I think part of what makes this interesting is the impact that it's going to have on the guys around. We talked a little bit in Tuesday's show about some of the, I guess if they're the silver linings to the stars being out, one of them is that Dennis Schroeder, for example, has taken on a bigger leadership role on the floor as a guard, not just as a scorer, but as a guy who, you know, I don't want to say plays the Rondo role because he's not that kind of point guard, but can be somebody who organizes an offense, facilitates it, and things like that in ways that he didn't really do even when he was playing well with LeBron on the floor. And so Anthony Davis talked about it and Vogel talked about it as well. If they can keep that, you know, that element to their offense where Schroeder can do those things while also adding LeBron back into the mix, that gives the Lakers that like little bit of extra something that you need from the supporting cast and is kind of, I think, the best sort of the best manifestation of what they hoped Schroeder could do when they brought him in to begin with.
Yeah, I think the biggest adjustment for Schroeder is just going to be figuring out how to pick his spots and really be judicious and efficient while he does this. Because during this period in April where he really turned it on, like obviously he lifted up his own individual play, but also just he's been the only person on the team who could reliably do what he does. Like THT maybe to some degree, but he hasn't been doing it regularly against the top competition. So it's basically been Schroeder's show to run. And, you know, he still has to make good decisions in terms of the shots that he pursues, the passes that he makes, drives, pull-ups, et cetera. But he hasn't needed to decide how to go about picking those spots because everything was put in his hands. He was the only guy capable of running the offense and scoring. So now he's got to figure out a way to, like, stay more mentally engaged even and in the flow of things, even if he's playing off-ball more often. And, you know, Brian, remember earlier in the season, I was pretty convinced that even though Schroeder was playing well, he and the Lakers would have been better served with him coming off the bench just in terms of pure utility, like between what you get from LeBron on any team, Davis as a scorer, Gasol at times as a facilitator. I thought the Lakers and Schroeder inevitably would have gotten more out of his time on the floor with him anchoring that second unit and then inevitably closing out games anyway. He's played really well during this time, and I think he's grown as a player because he's never done these sort of things on a team of this type of stature with these type of stakes. So now it's going to be about what has he learned from it that he can apply to a new situation.
And it, like you say, sort of picking those spots and it, but if it works, it just, it fills out the Lakers offense, late game offense in a way that, you know, this is why I threw my argument for, you know, you want him at the very least finishing games. I don't really, I never really care about starting. But you need him on the floor to finish games and he needs to be able to play capable defense and capable offense to do it because what he did in Orlando, I think he, what was it? 13 points, in the fourth quarter, something like that. And, you know, the ability to be a shot creator, to be an outlet, late in the shot clock, somebody who can put the ball on the floor himself that isn't LeBron or isn't AD is an element that the Lakers really lacked last year. And it's why they went out and got him. And, you know, to see, to, you know, if you can add to that the ability to really make good decisions on the ball and give the Lakers that Rondo kind of aspect to the offense, that is the kind of thing that raises that margin of error back up again. You know, they lost all the continuity. There are legitimate questions about the shooting, all that stuff. If you add Schroeder back into this, Andy, I think that's the kind of thing that's all of a sudden makes the Lakers, oh yeah, who's going to beat them over seven games if everybody's healthy? So up next, let's get into some big offseason business for the Lakers. It's not just players that they have to think about, according to Woj. It is also Frank Vogel. We'll do that next. First, Andy, it is time for the Ultra Player of the Week. I believe we gave the store away earlier. It's Dennis Schroeder. Three straight double-doubles, Andy, including 21 and 10 in Orlando on Monday. He's been really good. He's cranked it up, you could even say, to another level, probably because he's not weighed down by anything in the same way you wouldn't be weighed down by the 2.6 grams of carbs and 95 calories of Michelob Ultra. He's playing with joy. He's bringing the Lakers joy. And joy creates success. Enjoyment isn't the end game. It's the whole game. Michelob Ultra, are you happy because you win, or do you win because you're happy? So Woj was on NBA Countdown over the weekend and was talking about the Lakers and some of their offseason business. And one of the things that came up was Frank Vogel. The Lakers are likely, it seems, or certainly going to look into and try to facilitate a contract extension for Frank Vogel in this offseason. Heading into Wednesday's game, he is 88-44 as Lakers coach. And oh, by the way, he has that title that they won. You're not surprised that they would try to get this done as, you know, early and quickly and all that, right, Andy?
No, absolutely not. Frank Vogel has been a terrific fit with this team. In particular, he seems like he has really, really created a great relationship with LeBron and AD. This is a team that is in absolute win-now mode, and Frank Vogel seems to be a really important part of that equation, so it's not surprising in the slightest.
The moral of the story, I think, is we spend so much time trying to figure out, like, the right guy, the wrong guy, you know, oh my God, how did they let this happen? You know, because Vogel was third at best on the list.
At best, he was the third.
You know, obviously it was Ty Lu. It was
Monty Williams. Jason Kidd.
Yes.
I think they wanted to hire Jason Kidd, but the optics of bringing in Jason Kidd because of issues in his past with domestic violence, I think the Lakers kind of balked at that, but they wanted to have their cake and eat it too by having Jason Kidd be on whoever's staff. And in this particular case, he was next in line behind Vogel. And, you know, there was this narrative that Jason Kidd was basically there to take Frank Vogel's job.
Yes.
And he would just be making the jokes behind,
like, you know, he Vogel can't walk, you know, with his back turned out of a room because the knives will end up in it. Like, he's got to back out of every room that he's in.
You've seen the show Oz, right?
Sure.
Remember Schillinger, the head of the Aryans? He had that bald head and he had the eyes tattooed on the back of his head. That's what Frank Vogel needed. Like, specifically that type of tattoo, just right, as a reminder.
Without, though, being a member of the Aryan
brotherhood. Yes, very clear to make that distinction. He was getting it because he was suspicious of Jason Kidd. It had nothing to do with his actual beliefs. We just want to make sure that is clear. That would be problematic.
Yeah. To say the very least. That almost took a very dark turn. I can't say that, like, would Ty Lue have done worse? Like, I don't know. I mean, Monty Williams has had an enormous amount of success in Phoenix this year. He's, you know, very well could be coach of the year. Ty Lue is an excellent head coach. I don't know if they would have done worse. And, like, Frank Vogel obviously is a better. But they weren't going to do better. Like, Vogel won a title last year with this group, and he's done as good a job with this year's team under difficult circumstances as I think anybody could. And I think to back that up, you just have to look at where the Lakers are defensively right now, having lost so many games from critical players on both sides of the ball. It just goes to show that sometimes you, as much as we want to say that we know as sort of a basketball culture or whatever, we don't know. Like, there were a lot of reasons to think that Vogel wasn't going to work. And, you know, you look at that tenure in Orlando, that was terrible. And he felt like an afterthought and all of that stuff. And he's been fantastic.
He's a really good communicator. I mean, that's one of the things that I think Frank Vogel does really well, whether you're talking about communicating the schemes and, you know, what he wants from his players on the court. LeBron has talked many times about Frank Vogel's preparation and how much it impresses him. And LeBron is not an easy guy to impress along these lines. So when you hear it from him, that means something. But he also, too, he communicates with his players what he wants from them individually, what their roles are going to be, when they're going to play, when they may not play. And he does it in a way that's straight up. And I think that's why all of these guys, whether they like what they're being told by Vogel, whether they like their role, whatever, they respect him.
And they're defined. And those roles that you're talking about are very well defined.
Yeah.
And I think generally are defined in a way that is beneficial to the player. I think one of the things that has been really good with the Lakers over this time is they tend not to put players when everybody's healthy. I mean, obviously there are times when you just have to. They tend not to put players in positions where they won't succeed. You know, they distilled KCP's role down to the stuff that he should be best at. They encouraged Kuzma to find ways to succeed in things that he maybe wasn't as well suited for. But then you turn around and say, Markieff Morris, put in positions to do what Markieff Morris ought to do. Alex Caruso is deployed in a way that should make him successful. Like, he's really good at that. And I think players appreciate being put in positions to succeed, or in the case of Kuzma, being given sort of the latitude to learn a new way to succeed and then ultimately be rewarded by the franchise with a nice contract.
He's also too, Vogel. He has an incredibly positive attitude. Like, he exudes positivity in a way that doesn't feel fake or forced. And I remember his introductory press conference, which was an absolute farce because it was the first time that it was the first time anybody from the front office had spoken publicly, at least since Magic's resignation, maybe even before that. And, you know, that period was an absolute effing train wreck. And Vogel was up on the dais with Rob Pelinka, and nobody's asking Frank Vogel any questions because nobody's interested in anything Frank Vogel has to say. They want to talk with Rob Pelinka about everything that's been going on. Are you actually the backstabber that Magic says you are? Like, all these different things. And Vogel handled it perfectly. He was up there expressing excitement, expressing gratitude, just really, really likable and pumped to be there. But at the same time, though, he exudes this all shucks, you know, type of just humble. He's not afraid. And we saw the second game.
And yep. I think this is where you were going.
Yep.
When he put Anthony Davis at center to start the second half against Rudy Gobert, despite AD saying, I don't like playing center. I don't want to be at the five and all that. JaVale to play AD because strategically it was better for the Lakers, and they pulled Rudy Gobert away from the basket and they waxed the Jazz in the second half of that game. And I think that's critical. He is a perfect temperament, he's not a pushover. He is going to express himself. I think last year was like, he saw the same stuff we did with Jason Kidd and everything else. Like, hey, screw it. If I'm going to lose this job, I'm going to lose it doing it my way. And we'll see what happens. And in that process, I think he's certainly won over LeBron. He's won over AD. He's able to be a guy who commands respect without the need to command attention.
Yeah.
And I think that is critically important when you're coaching the Lakers generally, but particularly the Lakers with two superstars.
Yeah. I mean, he is very humble, but he's very confident. Also, this is a great way of framing everything that's going on. Harrison Fagan over at Silver Screen and Roll had a piece up, I think it was Harrison, either him or Christian Rivas, about this info from Woj, and I'm reading it. If Vogel signs an extension with Los Angeles this summer, he'll be the first Lakers head coach to sign an extension since Phil Jackson in 2007. Mike Brown, Mike D'Antoni, Byron Scott, and Luke Walton were all let go before their contracts expired. Maybe the most instructive way of putting this, Brian, is that Frank Vogel represents stability for the Lakers in that they are only paying one coach at a time. like if memory serves, there was a crossover period where they were paying Byron, Mike Brown, and Mike D'Antoni simultaneously. I know for a fact they were paying the Mikes at the same time. Yeah, like,
absolutely. Like
that they are only paying one coach for the foreseeable future at one time really speaks to how far along they've come.
Yeah, and they finally undid the error of missing the boat on Bernie Bickerstaff. Mm-hmm. All right, so kudos to Frank Vogel. I'm sure that's going to get taken care of over the summer, but it is very much like USC kind of fell backwards into the Pete Carroll era, which turned out to be one of the greatest in school history. The Lakers seem to have fallen into something with Frank Vogel that is just a perfect fit. They didn't necessarily do it on purpose, but they got there, and that's all that matters. Next, though, Andy, $5.2 million for a LeBron James rookie card. That, my friend, is FU money. We'll talk about that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar ever. The bars are covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft. They're easy to chew. I'm not going to call out, Brian, the ones that are not easy to chew by name, but they know who they are. The Built Bars, they're healthy. They're great for health conscious people. Whether you're trying to lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat, they're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, great for keto diets. They are even more deliciouser than before. They've got the 12 original flavors like raspberry, coconut almonds, salted caramel, banana bread, 6 new flavors, including cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, cookies and cream. They're perfect for someone like me who basically loves every taste on the planet. I love trying new, different, sometimes even weird sounding combinations that turn out to be awesome. You will never be bored eating the same thing over and over with Built Bars. Go to builtbar.com, use the promo code LOCKED15. You'll get 15% off your next order. Promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at builtbar.com.
Did you just use the word deliciouser?
Yes.
Locked On Lakers podcast also brought to you by betonline.ag. Betonline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season, it's in full swing. You can track all the action at BetOnline. You can also take that action to the track. The Kentucky Derby, it's back. The first leg of the Triple Crown, that happens this weekend. The NFL draft is on. All the news, odds, info for your sporting needs, you get that at BetOnline. So don't sit on the sidelines anymore. This is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device today to sign up and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with the promo code Locked On. Again, 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That's Locked On as the promo code. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Finally, this news. I'm reading you from ESPN, AD. A 2003-2004 Upper Deck Exquisite Collection RPA. Do you know what that stands for, Andy?
Not a clue.
Rookie Patch Autograph Parallel LeBron James Card, numbered out of 23, sold privately for $5.2 million with the PWCC Marketplace. This is a graded 9 card with a perfect 10 signature. It claims the throne for the most expensive basketball card ever sold, knocking Luka Doncic and his one-of-one 2018-2019 Panini National Treasures card that sold for $4.6 million in March. So,
yeah, I remember when people were saying
$5.2 million.
I remember when people were comparing Luka to LeBron, saying he was the next LeBron. Slow down, all right? Yeah. Not in any way, including card value.
Couple things jump out at me about this. First of all, that is a bleep ton of money to spend on a card. And
yes,
I mean, I presume this, it's not what the person who brought this wasn't like rent or LeBron James rookie card, but it's just,
can you put that on an EBT?
Layaway? Can I pay in installments? So layaway. If you had like, it's just, I have trouble wrapping my head first around the disposable income that you'd have to spend $5.2 million on something like this. Because yes, I understand it's an investment. It's that whatever. No, it's you buying toys, and it's so not what I would buy if I had an extra $5.2 million. That is an extraordinary amount of money to spend on a basketball card.
Yeah, you got to really be into that culture. You got to really, I would think, even be into LeBron. I mean, to spend that type of money, because even if you're looking at it as a pure investment, like
you
if
can't
it's
be a
player,
casual, you're not a casual at that point.
Yeah, I mean, you have to have some type of geekery towards LeBron as a fan, because I think just to muster up the enthusiasm, unless you are just cold and detached, 5.2 mil is still a lot of
maybe
money.
Maybe like LeBron, you're just a kid from Akron who made well, and you want a piece of that. The other part of this, though, that I think is the number that jumped out to me wasn't so much the 5.2 million, although it did. It was the 2003-2004 part. You go back to 2003 for LeBron James's rookie card. That is how long he has been around and playing at this. I realize he's hurt now, but he's coming back as we talked about. But like, even not whatever, playing at the level that he has since 2003, Andy, and you see it printed out in something like this for his rookie card, and it puts the whole thing in perspective about how long he's been doing it.
It's staggering. I mean, we say this all the time, but what LeBron is doing right now at his age with this type of mileage and this type of responsibility on the court, the longevity, it's unparalleled. Like there is no template for what LeBron is doing. He is, you were talking about the Luka Doncic card earlier. LeBron is 1-1 when it comes to this type of thing. Nobody has ever done it before. There's a really good chance nobody's going to do it again.
Oh, nobody's going to do this. Nobody's going to be, this career will be singular. There's nobody who's going to have this kind of run with this sustained. He has been the best player in the NBA for arguably a decade and a half. And in however many seasons, he's probably been the best player in at least, generously, if you wanted to give it to other people, at least half of them. Probably more, probably almost all of them, if we're being honest. That's not going to happen again. Not for a 20-year run, which is sort of what he's pointed to. It's not going to happen. 2003, Andy, 2 years into the George W. Bush presidency.
Yeah.
That's like three presidents ago. Yeah. Shows in the top 10, ER and Friends. Also a lot of CSI. So the more things change, the more they stay the same. This was 2-3 years before the debut of Top Chef, which feels like it's been on forever. 2003 was a long time ago.
Got a few more to throw at you. October 29, 2003 was when LeBron played his first game. At the time, the number one movie in America, Scary Movie 3, bumped 2 weeks later by Matrix Revolutions, then Elf, the number one album, Chicken and Beer from Ludacris, knocked off shortly after by Measure of a Man, the debut album of one Clay Aiken. Remember that guy?
Oh my God.
Clay Aiken was the bleep at the time. Everybody wanted to be in the Clay Aiken business. That's how long ago this was. We're also a week away from the debut of a show called Arrested Development, and the Marlins had just won a World Series over the Yankees. Again,
that was a good World Series, too.
It was a good World Series, but we are stretching back a ways, man.
Wow.
We're like 2 years ahead of Christian Bale's debut as Batman. 2 years ahead of that.
Right. And so imagine, like, in all of this stretch of time, LeBron James has been doing LeBron James things. So yet another thing that puts the career of LeBron into perspective. Lakers looking forward to him coming back. You know, again, according to Woj, says it could happen this week. Certainly looks like next week is live, so to speak. So we'll have plenty to talk about that going forward on the Locked On Lakers podcast in terms of LeBron. We're also going to talk about Ben McLemore and where the Lakers might finish over the course of the rest of the season, what seed is the best one for them. And finally, mark calendars, Friday, Howard Beck from Sports Illustrated is going to join us for the show. Always love talking to Howard. It's going to be a great show. So keep an eye out for all of these things on the Locked On Lakers podcast, and we'll see you next time.